Talking History on News Talk.
Well, welcome back to Talking History. Now, one of the more interesting articles I read last year was on the story of a Dublin family, because last year was the 70th anniversary of the death of PJ Medler, an undertaker, alderman and city councillor. And Paul O'Dear told the story of the Medler and indeed the family brilliantly in an article in the Dublin Historical Record. And I'm delighted to welcome Paul O'Dear to the show tonight to discuss it. Paul, you're very welcome.
Thanks very much, Patrick.
Can you tell me what got you interested in this story? Because it's through your in-laws.
It's through my in-laws. Well, my godmother was a Medler, and she was fairly close to my mother. And when I started digging into my family history, needless to say, as you do, you keep going back and back if you can. But I came across PJ Medler, who was her father. And in part out of sort of deference to her, I followed up that branch particularly. And he turned out to be an extremely interesting individual. His background starts in Kilkenny, basically. There were two brothers, two blacksmiths, one named John and one named Michael. And Michael stayed in Kilkenny and had a big family of rabid Republicans. And John came to town. They were both blacksmiths. John came to town and he worked down on the docks. And he married Eileen Brennan, who was in service up in Belvedere Place. And they had two sons. PJ was the first and Larry was another brother. But John went to America, apparently to his sister, and he was going to look for a job over there and sent for the family, but he died. So PJ's mother was then stuck with two young kids on her own in the city. So she sent them down to the respective grandparents down the country. And PJ was sent down to the Medlers in Kilkenny, which explains part of his sort of Republican background, although he was basically a constitutionalist, but sort of Republican leanings at least. And Larry went down to the other grandparents on the dock, which is on the lock on the Barrow, which is a sort of separate story. But by the time PJ came back into town, I think he had been inculcated with a certain amount of republicanism, although his activities originally were all constitutional. But when it came to the later period of the, say, when he went up to be a county councillor or a city councillor in 1920 and got elected, as you know, the city council at that stage was swinging very much in the Republican direction and in constant conflict with the British authorities. So his time on the council, he voted with the Republicans. He wasn't arrested or interned or anything, but some aspects of his sympathy with them, I suppose, would be the time that the prisoners were freed when the treaty was signed. At the end of 1921, being an undertaker, he had cars and stuff, so they ferried them around the place, and his wife, who would be my granny's sister, gave them lunch, according to the newspaper. But another aspect of it with the Free State, now he certainly wasn't a Free Stater by any means, but as an undertaker he got some of the contracts for the 77 who had been executed by the Free State and whose bodies were being released at the end of the Civil War. And, well, they were released to families, so the families had to engage various undertakers. And he was one of the undertakers who got some of the funerals. But he put an ad in the paper disclaiming all responsibility for the quality of the coffins, which, of course, would have been military boxes at the time and well below the standard of what he was advertising himself as an undertaker. You know?
Talk to me about his place in folklore then, and that phrase, the Medler's got you.
Well, the Medler's got you. I was in in Pier Street, in the archive there at a talk. And I met a lady there who, when I mentioned Medler, said, oh, there was a phrase in her family, the Medler's got you. And it was applied, if anybody got sick, they'd be told, oh, the meddlers got you. And she had no idea of the origin of this until I told her that meddler was the undertaker. But I think it probably came from the fact that, TB was rampant in those days. And I know from reading stuff about it that there was a terrible fear around, and you saw people whose pallor changed, and you knew they were on this path that 6 months later they'd be gone. And I suspect that that was very much sort of led to a fear of the undertaker. But on a more optimistic note, I suppose, his connections with the sort of folklore in the city, he had two sons, John and Paddy, and both of them married royalettes, believe it or not. And Pete St. John mentions the Inchicore Wake, where himself and Charles Claffey, who he was in partnership with as an undertaker for a while, are actually mentioned. And then he opened the Tivoli Cinema of sad fate these days in Francis Street in 1934. Following up his family, I found following up my own family history that in order to understand what's going on, you have to sort of look at a bit of history behind, a bit of national or whatever city history of whatever is going on.
And it explores a largely hidden dimension of the Irish story.
It does, yeah. For example, I had never heard of Little Jerusalem, for example. And it was only when I was following his addresses through Tom's and the voting register and so forth at the time. I mean, I knew he'd been at Leonard's Corner because they were still living there when I was small. But what I hadn't realised was that the house that he had moved into when he retired had previously been a Jewish house, three Jewish families in it. So now you've two Jewish families and one Gentile family. And his family did the Sabbath guy and all this stuff that's done on the Sabbath that the Jews are not allowed to do, shopping, cooking, turning on and off stuff and all that. And the house then gradually evolved after that to be a single Gentile house with only the meddlers in it, and until they moved out, and it's little aspects of that. I mean, Little Jerusalem is a big, it's a big part of Dublin's history, and we tend not to think about it. And for example, Chaim Herzog, who was born in Belfast but who was raised in Bloomfield Avenue around the corner, won't say what I discovered, but what surprised me to some extent, given the sort of apartness with which the Jews are looked on sometimes, was that the people living there, as far as they were concerned, he was local boy made good. I mean, he was important in the British intelligence service. He was one of the first with them into Belsen after the Second World War. He then became, as we know, President of Israel. And I mean, these things were all literally local boy made good, so there was a fair amount of integration, I think, with the Jewish community there. They weren't seen as all that apart,
And PJ died in 1949, so it was the 70th anniversary last year. What do you see was his legacy? Because he had those different roles, undertaker, businessman, publican, councillor. He had a range of different careers and sometimes juggling them all at once.
He did, yeah. Well, I suppose as an undertaker, you'd have to dig a bit for his legacy. But he certainly, in say opening the Tivoli, for example, it would have shown the regard that he was held in the area. And I remember from the undertakers, I certainly, from one of the legacies he has, is a story my mother had. When my mother was small, they used to be driven around in the hearse, and they were driven around in the back of the hearse with the curtains pulled. And as they were going along the road, they lifted up the curtains and they saw all the people blessing themselves. So that would be one legacy. It reminded me of when I used to travel on the 15 bus in from Rathgar to St. Louis and Rathmines, noticing I was upstairs because the dad smoked. And I remember every time we passed Harcourt Street Station, people, without looking out the window, they blessed themselves. There was this sort of subconscious idea of a public building that looked like a church was floating past at the edge of their vision, you know. So that story reminded me of that. But, I mean, as a legacy, I mean, he was involved in the Eucharistic Congress. He wouldn't stand out as somebody who had left plaques all over the place to him. But he participated in an awful lot of in an awful lot of local stuff, you know.
My thanks to Paul O'Dear for coming onto the show tonight to talk to us about a remarkable story, The Meddler's Gotcha, the story of a Dublin family. It was an article published in the Dublin Historical Record last year. It caught our eye, it caught our interest. We wanted to follow up with Paul, and as you can see, he tells the story so well indeed. Paul, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Patrick, a pleasure.
Well, a fascinating personal family history, The Meddler's Gotcha, brought to us there by Paul O'Dear. And that brings us to the end of another edition of Talking History.